know that God's economics are different oftentimes than regular economics. That God's financial principles are in contrast to some of the financial principles that you hear out there.
This is Straight Talk.
We're starting a new series entitled God Economics. And I would just want to remind you that the Bible talks a lot about giving, stewardship, investment, material possessions, and how we handle our finances. Early on in ministry, I talked very little about finances, partly because I was nervous to talk about finances because I thought a lot of people didn't want to hear about money when they came to church. And I wasn't sure that God had a lot to say about it. But as I began to study the Word, I realized and discovered that there are over 2,300 verses in the Bible that talk about money, finances, specifically about stewardship. So God has a lot to say about this topic. And in the midst of this economic recession, many of us need to grasp some principles right from the Word of God, not from Wall Street, but from the Word of God, to apply to our own personal finances. I think the principles that you're going to discover through these series of messages will be life-altering. So let's prepare our hearts as we get ready for the Word.
Thanks, Pastor Mark. Hi, everyone. Our message is going to be called Surviving Economic Crisis. And we are in the book of 1 Kings, chapter 17. Let's join Pastor Mark with Surviving Economic Crisis from our series called God Economics.
1 Kings, chapter 17. Today we're starting a two-part series entitled God Economics. How many of you know that God's economics are different oftentimes than regular economics? That God's financial principles are in contrast to some of the financial principles that you hear out there. Why are we doing a two-part series? Well, we decided that there is so much buzz right now and so much fear in the air over the economy. You can't turn on the television without seeing a reporter talk about the economic crisis that's looming over us. The presidential candidates, it's one of their number one themes, the economy in America. If you own a home, you understand that your home is going through changes in values. If you're trying to sell a home, you understand that this is a difficult time in the economy. Some of you have heard rumors at your job that people are being laid off or companies are downsizing. If you've gone to try to secure a loan to buy a car or to buy a house, you know that the banks have tightened up their credit processing system. In fact, it's so bad that there are several banks that have gone under. And of course, there has had to be just in this last week a bailout package that Congress has approved for $700 billion, which is huge. Some financial analysts are saying that it hasn't been this bad. There's not been an economic downturn like this since the Great Depression. So, in all of this, as a believer in Jesus Christ, as a Christian, what does this mean to you? And how do you navigate, and what perspective do you need to have as we go into some financial turbulent times? This morning I want to talk to you about four principles that you need to grasp, understand, and assimilate to be able to survive economic crisis. I want to talk to you about surviving economic crisis. So I want you to take your Bibles to 1 Kings chapter 17. If you're there already, I'm going to begin reading in the first verses of this verse, beginning with verse 7. It says, sometime later, the brook dried up because there had been no rain in the land. Then the word of the Lord came to him. It's speaking about Elijah the prophet, who actually happened to be living through an economic crisis called a famine. The famine was so severe that people were starving. It was so intense that it had lasted by this time about 3 years. And then the word of the Lord came to him, go at once to Zarephath of Sidon. Zarephath was a town that was located between Tyre and Sidon and was under the rulership of a man by the name of, he was Jezebel's father, the infamous Jezebel's father. And it was in the heart of the Baal-worshipping country, and it was one of the areas that had been most severely hit by this economic crisis, by the famine. So go at once to Zarephath of Sidon and stay there. I have commanded a widow in that place to supply you with food. So he went to Zarephath. When he came to the town gate, a widow was there gathering sticks. He called to her and asked, "Would you bring me a little water in a jar so I may have a drink?" As she was going to get it, he called, "Hey, and by the way, bring me please a piece of bread." The widow turned around and said to Elijah, "As surely as the Lord your God lives," she replied, "I don't have any bread, only a handful of flour in a jar and a little oil in a jug. I'm gathering a few sticks to take home, make a meal for myself and my son, that we may eat it and die." The Word of God. The first principle I want you to write down this morning is this. Remember that God is in the midst of the crisis with a purpose and a plan. Some of us believe that crisis is never the will of God. Some of us wonder why we're in the middle of a struggle in our life right now and wondering what we've done wrong that we're in the middle of a crisis. But I want you to know that just because you may be in a personal crisis, or just because you may be going through a personal tough time, whether it's economic or otherwise, it doesn't mean that you're out of the will of God. You see, sometimes in the middle of the storm, in the middle of a difficult time, you can be in the middle of the will of God. I remember the story of Jesus in the New Testament. It tells us in Luke chapter 8, verse 22 through 25, that one day Jesus was speaking to his disciples, and he said to his disciples, "Let's go over to the other side of the lake." So they got into a boat and they set out. And as they sailed, Jesus, who was in the boat, fell asleep. A storm came over the lake so that the boat began to sink. It was swamped with water, and they were in great danger. Do you get the picture here? The disciples are with Jesus at one side of the lake, and Jesus says, "Hey, grab a boat, let's go to the other side." The disciples get in the boat, just like Jesus said. "Let's go to the other side." So they set off to the other side, just like Jesus said. They did it just when Jesus wanted them to do it. And now they're in the middle of the lake where Jesus told them to go. And there's a major storm. So much so that the boat is sinking. Now, who told them to get in the lake? Who led them to the middle of the storm? Who was it? They were in the middle of God's will, led by Jesus. Now, what I want you to understand is that sometimes Jesus in life will lead us to the middle of the storm. Why? Because he's got a purpose and a plan in the midst of the storm, oftentimes to teach us lessons that we cannot learn any other way. How many of you know that there's lessons in the middle of the storm that you've learned in life that you could have probably learned no other way? It took a storm to teach you those lessons. Some of you are here because it took a storm to get you here. Some of you are here because in the middle of a tempest, God spoke to your heart in a strong way, and if it weren't for the storm, you'd have never learned that lesson. You would never be a follower of Jesus. You would never be worshiping today. It took a storm to open up your eyes. It took a storm to lead you to the center of God's will. God has the ability to use storms to accomplish his will. Never forget that. So, this economic crisis that we're experiencing in America has not caught God by surprise. It's not like God woke up one day, oh, I should have been following the stock market better. Wow, I should have been reading the Wall Street Journal better. I should have been consulting the economists. Listen, God knew about this economic crisis years ago. It caught Wall Street by surprise. The real estate market was blindsided. Our Congress was shocked over it. But God has always known. It didn't catch God by surprise. He has always known. He knew years ago. He knew 10 years ago that this was going to happen. He knew before it happened that there was going to be a crash. He knew that there would be a major turmoil at this time. This has not caught God by surprise. God has known about it, and God has a plan in the midst of it. In the story of Elijah, this widow with one child and no economic income is in the middle of a major famine. By the way, this famine was created by God. It was Elijah who prayed, Lord, may it not rain. And for 3 years, it did not rain by the hand of God. So this widow was in the middle of a storm, an economic storm that had been created by the hand of God because God was teaching the nation a lesson. Now, I'm not saying that God is teaching America a lesson with this economic crisis, but I do believe that in every crisis, there's lessons to be learned. And I also believe that our nation and our people and we as individuals have lessons that we need to learn. You ask yourself, well, why is this nation, why are we experiencing this economic crisis? Well, I'm not a financial analyst, but to summarize, in essence, why we've got to the point that we're at, there's one simple statement that tells us why we're at where we're at right now in this economic. We are living ultimately beyond our means. The nation is over $1 trillion in debt. Why? Our government has lived beyond our means. We were taught and ingrained from a young age really to live beyond our means. Think about it for a second. As soon as you're 15, 16, 17 years old, I hear now that there's credit cards that are being offered to, well, there were before we tightened up here, credit cards that are offering to at a very young age. I don't know about you, but do you get the barrage of mail that I do? Hey, just sign here, open up a credit card. Hey, here's checks. Do you get that mail? Hey, there's checks. Sign here. Get this credit. I mean, there's all of these companies that are saying, we'll give you credit. You need credit. You need 10,000, here's 10,000. You need 5,000, here's 5,000. So by the time someone goes to college, it's just assumed that you go to college, you get a college loan, right? So someone borrows money to go to college, and by the time they graduate from college and they're 23 years old, they could be $50,000, $60,000 in debt. Now the parents are saying this is worth the debt. You can do it. You'll get a good job afterwards. You'll just pay it off. So this person graduates from college. Now they're 24, 25 years old, and they have $50,000, $60,000 in college credit that they have to pay off. So the young woman marries another young man that also has another $30,000, $40,000 in college that they have to pay off. So now they have a combined debt of $70,000 in college loans that they have to pay off. So they get married, and of course, the average wedding in America in the Chicagoland area, I'm told, costs $30,000. My daughter's wedding is going to be a lot cheaper than that because I'm paying for it.
We'll be right back with Pastor Mark Jobe in a moment. You are listening to our Straight Talk radio message called Surviving Economic Crisis, which is from Pastor Mark's series called God Economics, How to Survive Recession, Depression, or Economic Crisis. After the broadcast, I'll tell you more about how you can get a free copy of this message as well as give you information regarding Pastor Mark's ministry at New Life Community Church in Chicago. Right now, let's get back to Pastor Mark. We're in the book of 1 Kings, chapter 17. Our Straight Talk message is called Surviving Economic Crisis.
Average wedding, $30,000. And so now someone has to pay for that wedding. Of course, the young couple says, well, we have to go out and have a decent honeymoon. And because they're not good savers and they've learned to live off of debt, they charge their honeymoon on their credit cards. And so now they're a young married couple. Both of them are working hard to pay off the bills. And of course, to the surprise and amazement and delight of the grandparents, they have a baby. Now they have a baby and they're all delighted about it, but they also realize that babies cost money. I heard recently that someone did a study of how much does it cost to raise a child to the age of 18. The average person in America spends, get this, listen to this, close to $300,000 on a child by the time they're 18 years old. You feed, buy clothes, spend this, that, insurance, all the $300,000 in 18 years. That's pretty expensive, right? That's not including college. If you include college in that, the average American spends, by the time their son or daughter has graduated from college, $400,000 on their child. So this young couple gets married and they have their debts and they're managing it and they both get jobs. And of course they have a baby and they think, well, hey, we've been driving this little piece of junk around. Man, we need a minivan. Because the minivan has space and our baby has strollers and car seats and it's more secure. So they go down, easy credit, buy a car, $350 a month payment on a minivan. But now we have a minivan. Really, the bank owns it. So now they own the minivan. Of course, they drive around and they're in the small little apartment saying, we need more room. Our baby needs a yard to play in. And within a short amount of time, they find out she's pregnant again. So they say, we need a bigger house. And so they look around, of course, that we need a bigger house and good schools. And they look around and find a house and they say, we need to buy it. I know we can't really afford it right now, but it's for our future, our children, their destiny. And so they put down payment on a house and they stretch themselves. So now they're making a payment on the minivan. They're making a payment on their house. They're making payments on their college loan still. They're still paying off their wedding. And they are trying to survive, living the American dream. Now they're up to here. The bank has said, sure, we'll give you money. No problem. No money down. They're weighing over their heads. A lot of stress on their marriage. They're both working really hard. They have to pay for daycare because their children are in daycare because the mom can't stay home. And dad's thinking about working another job. And voila, welcome to the American family. 35 years old, in debt way over their head, hoping that the economy will continue to go on. And you say, wow, who taught us that? Well, we've perpetuated that cycle. And not only us, but our government has taught us that cycle. Our city government has taught us that cycle. Our schools have taught us that cycle. Our bank system has taught us that cycle. Our bank system are way overextended. Our mortgage way overextended. Our government way overextended. Our personal lives way overextended. So therefore, credit is based on consumer confidence. Once you loan someone money, only if you have confidence that they can pay you back. Once you start to lose the confidence, then you say you get no more credit. And give me that money back. So that's what's happened. There's been a domino effect in our nation. The banks have stopped loaning out because they have no money to lend out. The government has to bail them out. Most people are already up to their neck right here. The economy slows down. Then they are unable to pay their bills. Foreclosures start kicking into the mortgage. And voila, welcome to the mess that we're in right now. Bottom line, living above our means, over our means, on credit. Now this woman, this widow, was caught in the middle of an economic crisis that she had not brought on herself, but her culture had brought, the circumstances had brought onto her, and she was in the middle of a national crisis that was affecting her personal life. And I want to tell you this, I want you to understand this. I believe that there's a course correction happening in our nation and probably a course correction that needs to happen in most of our lives and our institutions. You cannot live on credit forever. There comes a time where the credit has to come in, where people have to live on what they make, and it's affecting our entire nation and economy. But the point that I want to make is this, that God has not been surprised by it. God knows about it. God's involved in it and God has a plan in it. He's led us to the middle of the storm, and those that will learn from this storm will come out with their head lifted high, having learned great lessons and surviving this economy, and others will crash and burn in it. So I want to make sure that we're learning during this period of time and learning what God is trying to tell us during these times of economic course correction. Second point that I want you to write down is this. Your economic success starts with what you currently possess, not with what you lack. Notice what it says in this passage, that this woman, that Elijah the prophet goes to this woman in Zarephath, and he comes and he sees her there. She's gathering sticks, and he calls to her and asks her, "Would you bring me a little water in a jar so I may have a drink?" Now, water is fairly easy. Sure, I'll bring you a glass of water. And then he, you know, you give someone an inch, they take a mile, right? "Give me a glass of water." "All right, I'll give it to you." She doesn't say anything. And then he says, "Oh, and by the way, give me a piece of bread." Now I see her straightening up, putting her hands on her hips, looking around, wagging her head a little bit. And she says, she knows he's a prophet, and she says to the prophet, she says, "As surely as the Lord your God lives," the very first words out of her mouth are, "I don't have any bread. You're asking me for something that I don't have." There's a huge lesson in this. You see, I believe that most of us, when it comes to times of crisis, especially when it comes to economic crisis, that oftentimes what most occupies our mind is what we don't have rather than what we do have. That what we're obsessed about is what we don't possess rather than what we do possess. Here's what I want you to understand. God is never going to hold you accountable for what is not yours. He will hold you accountable for what you do have, though. God is never going to say, "What did you do with that money that you never had? You never had it." But he is going to hold you accountable with what you do have. And oftentimes in the middle of crisis, what happens is we start thinking that if we had more, we would do better. And our problem is we don't have enough. In fact, they've interviewed Americans overall and said, "All right, what would it take to, what would solve your financial woes?" Most Americans believe that if they had a $15,000 to $20,000 increase in their income, that it would solve most of their financial woes. I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand if you think it would solve most of your financial woes. But if someone were to say, "Hey, how could you do better economically? Hey, if I just had $24,000 a year, man, it would solve it." Here's what I know, though. What I know is that if whatever you currently have you are mismanaging, then if we add more into that pile, then you will continue to mismanage, but at a larger scale. It's not about what you don't have. It's about what you do have and how you manage and what you do with what you have, not about what you could do with what you don't have. Are you following me this morning? You know, there's a simple biblical principle. It's if you say, "What I have, I'm dropping." If I'm juggling and I'm dropping what I have, why do you think you'd do better if we added a few more oranges to your juggling? You're going to drop what you have because you haven't learned to manage the little that's already in your hand. And most of us, we focus spiritually, economically, relationally on what we don't have. That becomes our obsession. And we think the answer is that we need more. When God typically turns our attention to what we do have, and he says, "Your answer's not in what you don't have because you can't control that. Your answer is in what you do have." Are you with me? So the first thing that God has this woman do is look at what she does have. She starts by saying, "I don't have," but it was not true. She really did have. She didn't have a lot of it, but she had some.
You've been listening to Pastor Mark Jobe's Straight Talk message called Surviving Economic Crisis, which is part of our current series called God's Economics. As I mentioned earlier, if you'd like to have a copy of this message, you can download it for free with our Straight Talk app. Just log on to PastorMarkJobe.com. That's PastorMarkJobe, J-O-B-E.com. There you will also find other helpful tools to help you in your walk with God. If you'd prefer to have a CD of the message, just contact our office at 773-585-3300. That's 773-585-3300. CDs are only $5 plus shipping, and Pastor Mark's book, called Unstuck, is also available for just $10 plus shipping. If you're looking for a home church, we invite you to check out one of our 25 New Life locations in and around Chicagoland. Just log on to newlifechicago.org. That's newlifechicago.org. We would love to meet you. Well, that's it for us here on Straight Talk. Thank you so much for listening. We hope that you've enjoyed the broadcast. Please do tell a friend about our Straight Talk programs as well. Join us again tomorrow as we continue on with our current series called God's Economics. Have a great night, and God bless.